Welcome to SCOTUS Cast, Taxpayer Standing Edition. Thank you for tuning in. On April 4th, 2011, the Supreme Court announced its decision in Arizona Christian School Tuition Organization versus Wynn. In Arizona, there is a state program that offers a tax credit to people who make contributions to school tuition organizations, or STOs. STOs use the contributions to provide scholarships to students who attend private schools, including religious schools. The questions in this case were: 1. Does a taxpayer have standing to challenge the state's tax credit program as a violation of the Establishment Clause? And 2. Does the state's tax credit program violate the Establishment Clause? In an opinion delivered by Justice Kennedy, the court held by a vote of 5-4 that the taxpayers lacked Article III standing to challenge the program. Furthermore, because the taxpayers lacked Article III standing, the court did not reach the question of whether the tax credit program violated the Establishment Clause. Chief Justice Roberts and Justices Scalia, Thomas, and Alito joined Justice Kennedy's opinion. In addition, Justice Scalia filed a concurring opinion, which Justice Thomas joined. Justice Kagan filed a dissenting opinion, which Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor joined. To discuss the case, we have Joshua P. Thompson, who is a staff attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation. Mr. Thompson was on an amicus brief in support of the petitioners. As always, the Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Thompson.
Hello, my name is Joshua Thompson, and I'm an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. Let me take a moment to thank the Federalist Society for inviting me back to discuss the Supreme Court's decision in Arizona Christian School Tuition Organization versus Wynn. I'm honored to be part of this scholarly SCOTUS Cast series. In full disclosure, Pacific Legal Foundation has an education reform project, which is furthered through amicus curiae participation in courts throughout the country. In support of this mission, PLF filed an amicus brief supporting the petitioners in the case we are discussing today. In this case, four Arizona taxpayers brought suit alleging that an Arizona statute is unconstitutional under the Establishment Clause. The plaintiffs alleged that Arizona Revised Statute 43-1089 violated the Establishment Clause. Section 1089 works like this. Arizona allows school tuition organizations to incorporate. In order to qualify as a school tuition organization, it must give 90% of its revenue to students in the form of tuition payments to attend, quote, any qualified school of the parent's choice. There are both secular and sectarian school tuition organizations. Anyone can donate to a school tuition organization. Moreover, and here's where the alleged Establishment Clause violation occurs, individual taxpayers can donate up to $500 to a school tuition organization and reduce the amount owed on their state income taxes by the amount of their donation. An example should help illustrate how the statute works. Imagine you are an Arizona taxpayer and you get your tax bill saying you owe the state of Arizona $1,500 in income taxes. You can either pay the full $1,500 tax liability to the state of Arizona or choose to only pay the state $1,000 and donate the other $500 to a school tuition organization of your choice, secular or sectarian. Plaintiffs allege that by allowing any money to go to religious schools, money that otherwise would go to the state in the form of an income tax payment, the state was respecting an establishment of religion in violation of the First Amendment. There were two issues before the court. The obvious issue was whether the Arizona statute violated the First Amendment's prohibition on a law respecting an establishment of religion. But the court never reached this issue because it found plaintiffs lacked standing to proceed in federal court. Thus, the other issue, whether plaintiffs had standing as taxpayers to challenge the Arizona statute, commanded the entirety of the court's opinion. Plaintiff's claim of standing was predicated on a limited exception to traditional standing law first enunciated in a Warren Court decision titled Flast v. Cohen. Pursuant to Flast, taxpayers have standing when two conditions are met. First, there must be a logical link between the plaintiff's taxpayer status and the type of legislative enactment attacked. Second, there must be a nexus between the plaintiff's taxpayer status and the precise nature of the constitutional infringement alleged. Both the majority and the dissent agreed that Flast was controlling, but they differed on its application. The court was divided along traditional lines. Chief Justice Roberts, along with Justices Kennedy, Scalia, Thomas, and Alito, commanded a majority of the court, while Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan were the dissenters. Justice Kennedy wrote the court's opinion. The court's opinion, however, does not begin with FLAST, but instead with traditional notions of standing. The court noted how standing questions arise out of Article III's case or controversy requirement, and that strict adherence to the case or controversy requirement maintains the public's confidence in an unelected but restrained federal judiciary. Accordingly, federal courts should not, quote, wield an unconditioned authority to determine the constitutionality of legislative acts. The court explained why taxpayer standing is generally prohibited in federal courts. Namely, where a plaintiff's standing is predicated on her status as a taxpayer, there is no direct and particular financial interest in the suit, and standing rests on unjustifiable economic and political speculation. Here, under traditional notions of standing, the Arizona taxpayers cannot demonstrate any actionable interest in the suit. Plaintiffs cannot show that the statute has an adverse financial effect on Arizonans, and even if they could, they cannot show that invalidating the statute would prompt Arizona lawmakers to pass along the savings in the form of tax reductions. Accordingly, plaintiffs could not demonstrate either causation or redressability under traditional notions of standing. The court then explained why the plaintiffs do not have taxpayer standing under FLAST. Ultimately, the issue came down to whether a tax credit is substantively different from a governmental expenditure. The court held that it was. Assuming an unconstitutional program, the court explained that an objecting taxpayer who has paid money into the state knows that her specific dollars have been extracted and spent towards an establishment of religion. Conversely, with respect to a tax credit, that same taxpayer cannot claim that any of her tax dollars have been used for that purpose. In sum, there is no connection between the dissenting taxpayer and the establishment of religion. The court noted that when Arizona taxpayers contribute to tuition organizations, whether secular or sectarian, they are contributing their own money, not money of the state. The plaintiffs here could simply choose not to contribute to religious organizations. Thus, pursuant to FLAST, absolutely no governmental money can be traced to a sectarian school. The court noted that the, quote, contrary position assumes that income should be treated as government property even if it has not come into the tax collector's hands. Accordingly, plaintiffs' claim for standing under FLAST also failed. The court concluded its decision by noting that if the tax credit were to disadvantage a particular religious or non-religious group, the party would not have to rely on FLAST to challenge the law. Such a plaintiff could claim traditional Article III standing, but that factual predicate was not before the court. Thus, the court dismissed plaintiff's claim by holding that they lacked standing to proceed. Justices Scalia and Thomas concurred in the judgment, but wrote separately to note that, quote, under a principled reading of Article III, FLAST is an anomaly in our jurisprudence, irreconcilable with Article III restrictions on federal judicial power. Nevertheless, both justices joined the majority opinion in full because it found that plaintiffs lacked standing under FLAST. Justice Kagan, joined by Justices Ginsburg, Breyer, and Sotomayor, wrote a biting dissent. Justice Kagan began by arguing that the court's discussion of traditional standing was completely irrelevant. The case only concerned the applicability of FLAST, and on that score, the court's opinion fails on both precedential and logical grounds. With respect to past precedent, the dissent makes its strongest argument. Justice Kagan counted five separate Supreme Court opinions where the standing of plaintiffs was predicated on nearly identical grounds as here, including a previous incarnation of this same case. In these five cases, the plaintiff's standing was based on their status as a taxpayer under FLAST, but the ultimate statute at issue was a tax credit scheme similar to the one in Arizona. The majority opinion did rebut this point by noting how in none of the cases cited by Justice Kagan was the standing issue presented to the court. However, Justice Kagan then countered by arguing that they were not at issue because standing was, quote, taken as obvious. Moreover, even if these decisions are not binding, the court should have afforded them great weight, but instead the court simply shrugged them off. Justice Kagan also disputed the court's understanding of tax credits. She argued that they are identical to governmental expenditures. Using a term first coined by Stanley Suri, who the dissent cites, Justice Kagan argued that these credits are actually, quote, tax expenditures. In other words, where the government grants a tax break, like the one at issue in Wynn, it is simply deciding to spend its revenue in a different form, namely by not accepting the revenue in the first instance. Using this economic model as her backdrop, Justice Kagan then attacks the majority opinion for its, quote, distinction in search of a difference. She notes how the statutory scheme enabled in Arizona has diverted $350 million in revenue. The dissent highlights its disagreement with the majority's holding through a series of interesting hypotheticals, spanning the bailout crisis to a hypothetical stipend for Jews to reward religious devotion. One example should suffice. Justice Kagan asks, quote, assume a state wishes to subsidize the ownership of crucifixes. It could purchase the religious symbols in bulk and distribute them to all takers, or it could mail a reimbursement check to any individual who buys her own and submits a receipt for the purchase, or it could authorize that person to claim a tax credit equal to the price she paid. Now, really, do taxpayers have less reason to complain if the state selects the last of these options? The majority did not directly respond to Justice Kagan's hypothetical, but one response does come to mind. Under Justice Kagan's hypothetical, a plaintiff would not need to rely on taxpayer standing. A plaintiff would have an injury because the state is favoring religion over non-religion, or Christianity over other religions. Thus, even with the distinction drawn by Justice Kagan, the majority would agree that a plaintiff would not have taxpayer standing to challenge the crucifix tax credit. However, a plaintiff would have traditional Article III standing. Ultimately, however, the dispute between the court's opinion and the dissents rests on what a tax credit is. The court holds that a tax credit never constitutes government money, but the dissent argues that a tax credit is indistinguishable from a governmental expenditure. The Arizona's Christian school case is rightly seen as a win for proponents of school choice. Tax credit schemes, like the one in Arizona, can no longer be challenged by taxpayers. Accordingly, so long as states do not favor a particular religion, or religion over non-religion, when creating individual tax credits, as the one in Arizona showed, school choice programs should be free from Establishment Clause suits. More broadly, the language that is sure to be plucked from the majority opinion and litigated by taxpayer plaintiffs going forward is whether a government scheme has, quote, extracted and spent taxpayer dollars. If the money never reaches government coffers, the government has not extracted and spent tax dollars, and a plaintiff may not claim taxpayer standing. Conversely, if the government spends tax dollars in the first instance and then provides, for example, a tax rebate, it is possible that the court would hold that a taxpayer would have standing to challenge the extraction and expenditure of tax dollars in violation of the Establishment Clause.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUS Cast. For more episodes of SCOTUS Cast, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at www.federalistsociety.org/multimedia.